session number 14616, reel 5.
Major O'Brien, reel 5.
This area I was in, I met up with these other three chaps, and we were living sort of very frugally. So I decided on the morning of the 22nd of November to do a recce, to see things had gone very quiet and so on. And unfortunately, I was going down, as I thought, well camouflaged towards the river when I was I learned later it was German patrol. There was a chap behind a machine gun and a corporal with him, and they opened fire on me. They just obviously I was in civilian clothes, of course. They just caught sight of me and they opened fire, but they not to kill me or anything, just to stop me. And that was one burst. I got a second burst, and then I looked over towards... There was a sort of a water course running down towards the river, and they were on the other side of it. So they told me to come, and I went. And within half an hour, I was talking to a second lieutenant in the German army who gave me some food and so on. And then I was I was sent next day to what I commanded was their brigade headquarters. I stayed overnight. Anyway, on the 24th, I was back in Sulmona, whence I had skipped on the 6th of October. I was back in the camp I'd escaped from. From there, I had one attempt to escape there, but it didn't come to anything. And then we were moved to Aquila. From this camp on the 16th of December. 16th of December we were moved. And again, it was an old... it had been made into a sort of a transit camp. There were a lot of ex-prisoners of war there and that sort of thing. And I was there from the 16th then until New Year's Eve, the 31st. Of December, and then we were moved finally to this place called Bisignano near Spoleto. There were about 10 or 15 officers in this particular camp, and amongst them are two South Africans, a British officer called Ian Reed, and two South African, British, and an Australian, and we decided to have a go at getting out there. Well, what used to happen, they used to bring bones in a vehicle at night and put it, drag it through with hot water and then boil soup. Well, again, to cut a long story short, we managed to contrive to get in the back of this vehicle. We were driven out to their car park, about 11 o'clock that night, we went first, Reed and this Australian went, and then myself and the two South Africans. We got over two 12-foot fences. They were just ordinary wire fences. And we were away. We were out out of the bag again. So that was again the night of the. It's amazing how 6/7 seems to come into it. That was the night of the 6/7 of January 1944. We then headed over to the Valley of Nero, Valle di Nero, and into the district of Umbria. Now, very soon after I got to Umbria, I met a chap who was sort of the leader of the local partisans. He was a fellow called Sergio Forti, a very brave young Italian. He'd been an Italian naval officer. He and his family had to escape after the armistice. He was no longer serving in the navy, but they were Jews, and they had become a target due to their being Jews for the Germans, who were doing horrible things to Jews, as we well know. Anyway, I met him, and he introduced me to a fellow called Colonel Mellis, who was also a partisan leader. And he introduced me to what I was, Lieutenant of the Royal Engineers. And in due course, round about the March time, there'd been a parachute drop of explosives with some Italian parachutists. But what had happened, like often happens, the explosives landed where the parachutists weren't. The parachutes had all been captured. Anyway, the villagers had garnered all this stuff in, and it fell into our hands. So we had quite a lot of explosives, which was just what the doctor was, as far as I was concerned, because we thought, well, now we can do something with this. So we managed to get hold of, well, 40, 30 or 40, he organised all this, there were donkeys and so on, and suddenly, about the middle of March, around about that time, these donkeys appeared, it was loaded up with the explosive, which we were then allowed to hide in the local cemetery in some of these old tombs that were there, which the Italians said we could use. It was a slight bit of desecration, but they were quite wholesome. They were concrete type of tombs with things that slid over, you know, on little wheels and things. And that was our explosive store. Then round about I sort of did my best to instruct these Italian partisans in the use of explosive on railway lines and attacking communications, you know, pylons and anything that they considered. Of course, I mean, they had better knowledge of the country than I did, so I could just sort of tell them how to use them and tell them to go and get on with it. I don't know how effective their efforts were, but certainly, Forty myself, we did one or two jobs on our own. We roadblocks, we sort of blew great chunks of half hillsides down, or we hoped it was half hillsides down onto the main roads the Germans were using, that sort of thing. But the big thing was, in the area there was a hydroelectric power station at a place called Preci. Now, Forty and myself recce'd this place just before the end of April 1944, and I discovered that all the water came down a place called Viso, these massive great 2-foot pumps, and that then shot down into the valley and fed the hydroelectric alternators that ran this power station. Well, the main water valve or control mechanism was way up in an embankment, way up in the embankment, quite away from in the valley where the actual power station was. So I was, and it was set down in a deep sort of brick excavation, if you like, and of course it was just a sitting duck, really, just a job for explosives. So anyway, on the night of the 30th of April, one of the South Africans who'd escaped with me, a guy called Joe Lieutenant Joe Woods. He was a South African infantry. 40 for some reason couldn't come actually on the job. He organised everything. I don't know what he was. He was up to something else. Anyhow, I can't remember the detail there. But Joe Woods and myself, Joe Woods I took with me to carry the explosive and so on, just be a sort of a bit of a morale booster. And off we went. We got to our target. We put the explosive round it, and it was just a lovely target. Because, I mean, this deep brick thing and this great valve, I mean, it was wonderful. It contained all the blast, and one didn't have to lose an awful lot of explosives. It caused an awful lot of trouble, an awful lot of damage. Well, anyway, we put a two-hour pencil, time pencil on it, and just walked away. It sounds all very easy, and it was really, but there's no question about it that had we run into any Germans, we'd have been in trouble, obviously. Anyway, we know it was a great success because there was we heard reports about vast numbers of inundation of fields round about and vast amounts of fish were available to the local population. So really, there was a form of compensation. So really, in a nutshell, that was my partisan activities, really.
Were these partisans of a particular political conflict?
Well, now this is interesting that you should ask that question, because there was a Yugoslav partisan band in the area who used to wear red stars, and whenever they met you, they'd give you this salute and so on, but they would clench fists, and they would not cooperate with the sort of the Anglo-Italian show at all. And in fact, this had rather disastrous consequences, because on the 14th of June, 3 days really before our place was liberated, Sergio Forti, that the Germans were retreating. We knew that because he was extremely brave chap. He could speak German, English, and Italian. He was a terribly brave fellow. He used to actually, in the interim periods, he used to go down to this town of Norcia where the Germans were. This was sort of, you know, from the time I met him in February, and he used to go and talk to the Germans, the local commanders, and all the rest of it. And he became quite sort of trusted by them. Of course, he used to bring us back all sorts of information, you see, which was a good thing. And of course, they never cottoned on to him, fortunately. And he really was very useful. Anyway, we were going out. It was the 14th of June, and Sergio, in a way, it was a pity. It was somewhat rushed. We had a fair amount of this explosive left. Not too much, but enough. And Sergio said, oh, there's a couple of bridges going towards where we know the Germans are pulling out. There are a couple of bridges on roads they're using, and we could go and try and blow those up, you see. Now, unfortunately, he didn't give us the exact location. He was leading. He was a leader. So there was four of us, and we set out on the morning of the 14th, and we went sort of south from Norcia, it was, and we actually ran across, in the field, quite close to this particular village, which turned out to be disastrous for us. There were four Germans, and they were fast asleep. We could have cut their throats on the interim, and we just got skirted around. They were just flat out. They were so obvious. They were retreating. They were tired. You know, when you get so tired, they were just sleeping the sleep of the just. And we just skirted around them, and they're headed for this village. Now, again, though Sergio was a very gallant chap, he got overconfident, I'm afraid. And we took a sort of a shortcut, as it were, through this village, which we should have skirted as it happened. And on the way through the shortcut, we suddenly came across a rather large-looking German with a Tommy gun. We walked past him. We got about, good 300-400 yards past him. And we were in Indian file. And by this time, Sergio was bringing up the rear. We changed our heat reasonably, but he was bringing up the rear. So as soon as this chap started calling, Sergio said to us, now, you'll all be in a bad... I can speak German. I can flannel my way out of this. So he was quite confident, you see. But, so we quickly... We just kept going. He, whether he was able to get rid of his explosives, I don't know, but he went back so confident that he was going to be able to talk his way out, you know, sort of thing. Well, I don't know who those characters were. I'm an Italian, sort of thing. But anyway, again, whatever happened, we don't know, but they shot him. And he was assassinated. He was shot. He was shot, and it was all terribly sad because his parents were living in the village and so on, and we got his body back. And 3 days later, of course, our own forces arrived in the area, and he got a tremendous funeral. In fact, he was awarded the Italian VC, then what they call their gold medal, which he richly deserved. But in the end, I just felt that he was just that little bit too brave, which, of course, was a great shame. Yes, he was a great chap and a great patriot.
Did he reveal his political affiliations to you?
Oh, yes. He was absolutely, true blue to us. He was anti-Badoglio, oh, yes, and very much anti-German. And, in fact, on one occasion, during this period, I say between the February and the final disastrous 14th of June, and we used to get the odd Germans. They used to come into this. I was in a village called... there were two villages. One was called Abeto and the other was called Todiano. They're only about a mile apart, really. And I was in Todiano, and 40 in this family, they had hired a place in this little village of Abeto. I was in Todiano. And they were sort of, you know, a very cultured family, because his father had been the managing director of Lech Transport in Trieste. 40 senior had been. And also they'd had an office in Rome as well. But anyway, his main thing was Trieste. And they were a very cultured family. They had piano, and they, you know, if you were a bridge player, you played bridge with them, and all this sort of thing. They were really very nice, and very, very true blue.
It doesn't sound as though he was a communist, then.
Oh, no, far from it. He wasn't a communist. No, he wasn't a communist. Far from it. The last thing he was a communist.
Were any of his band communists?
No, not none of the Italians. Oh, but as I say, now, unfortunately, what we... This particular chap, who he was a part of the S, the Goering, we learned this afterwards, the Goering SS division who were pulling through, and he was a massive fellow, and apparently what we learned later was that the Yugoslav partisans, without telling us, had ambushed this particular lot of soldiery the night before. Had ambushed them, and I don't know if they'd killed many, I don't know what it, but they had, and these, obviously these Germans were pretty angry. Now, they had not, had they told us that, had they cooperated, well, we may not never have gone on this mission, or else we would have been a jolly sight more careful. But they hadn't cooperated, and I'm afraid, really, we only heard this later, that they'd done this thing. They would not try and coordinate. We wanted to coordinate with them, but they wouldn't. They had this sort of fixture about, you know, red stars and saluting and so on with the hand, clenched fist, which is all very sad because I'm quite sure that also contributed to the fact that Sergio was treated like he was.
Were these guerrillas or partisans you were with getting supply drops from
air,
from Britain?
Yeah, in fact, and that's, I'm getting interested you've mentioned that because we actually received round about... soon after I got in this area, and I'd met 40 and so on, a couple of officers arrived going through our area. It was a little village. I met them in this little village of Fiano. You see, there was Norcia, was the great county town with all these little villages all around it. And Norcia was a walled city, and they used to go in there and market there and that sort of. It was had a hotel and things, a bit civilized, but all the surrounding villages like Todiano, Abeto, Fiano, Colazione, all these Poggio di Croce, and all these villages were all part of this setup, you know, in Umbria. And we on the about the end of February, we. There were two officers, and they went through, and they knew we were there. I don't know. They obviously were heading for the Adriatic somewhere. Anyway, they got through, and we had a drop. We actually had a parachute drop. We had three or four big canisters dropped on parachutes, you know, in this village of Fiano, and it was wonderful because there were boots and medical supplies and clothing. No, there was no ammunition or explosives. I just think that the Italian partisans got all this when the Italian army collapsed. Of course, it was a lot of the soldiery took their weapons with them, and that sort of thing. I think a lot of the armoury did come from the collapse of Italy after the 8th of September. So that's really where they must have got all their arms from, I feel. But what we got this drop, and then on the we were also due to get another drop in April, and we put out our, and that time that was going to be a radio operator and all the rest of it. You see, this chap 40, he had all sorts of contacts. He seemed to have. He used to go to Rome. In fact, Sergio went to Rome and took a note from me into the Vatican, where a fellow called Major Sam Derry had got into the Vatican. He wrote a book, this chap, Derry. He'd been in Chieti, he'd been the escape officer there. Sam Derry got into the Vatican, and with Monsignor O'Flaherty, again all this is documented, he was sending out money to all these POW like ourselves who were in the surrounding country all around Rome, all that area. And, of course, it was all very illegal and so on, but it was being done. And anyway, Sergio Forti was actually able to take a note from me in, and Sam Day recognised my signature, and I'd been in Chieti, I think we got all together. We got about, over 200,000 lira sent to us, you know, which was jolly good, and we were able to distribute it to all sorts of people and pay our way a bit, and it all helped to boost our morale. and particularly when we were in this, doing this partisan activity, and it all helped an awful lot. But the other drop I was talking about, there was due to be another drop, and a radio operator. This was towards the end of April. But somehow, the location, we had the 40 was in on this, and we'd put our burning sort of like in the form of a cross, burning sort of straw stuff, you know, haystack, and so many yards between us, so many yards across, and the planes came over. And they could almost touch their waist, but for some reason, whether the map reference wasn't right, we were in the wrong valley, I shall never know. But though they came over very low, but we never got a second drop. So the only drop we really got was the one at Fiano, which were new boots and clothing and stuff like that, and a message saying, chin's up, you know, keep it going, chaps, sort of thing, you know.